Hey, friends, I've got Heidi Lovey back with us.
Hi, guys.
Welcome. I was just about to warn people they better buckle up.
Oh, yeah, right? Like, it always gets a little fucking weird between the two of us, I think.
Yeah, I think. It's part of the fun, right?
This is great. Thank you for having me back. I love talking to you. This is good.
I know, you're fun too. And today we're going to talk about something super fun, right?
So fun. Oh my God, girls. So fun.
Yeah? You want to introduce the topic?
We are talking about stress is what we're talking about today. And, you know, just to kind of give it some context, this came up when you and I were having an offline conversation. And in our offline conversation, I told you what I told my patients is that you can't manage stress. That kind of idea can be a game changer. I think the idea of managing stress is just, it's so, I can manage stress. I'm a man. I got this. I'm an individual. Like, I can do this. You know, I live in New York, right? So you can't manage the subway. You can't manage fucking New York. You can't manage COVID. You can't manage, like, the looting that's happening down the street. Like, you can't manage shit. Those are all stressors. And this idea that, like, we can manage stress is actually inauthentic and adds to it. And I think, you know, like right now in this time, like especially as practitioners, we need to take a play from that game book and be like, wait, I don't have to manage this because it's impossible. I'm asking the impossible of myself. And I think it's important. It's the conversation that I've been having since March with people. And it's a conversation I'm having to remind myself about. Right? That I can't manage stress. You can't manage stress. We can't manage the elections, the news source, the blah, 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 blah. So what can you manage? You can manage your vitality. And that's where your responsibility is.
And that's where the power is.
It's really powerful. It's just like a slight paradigm shift. Just like it's a 2-inch paradigm shift, right?
Okay. So it's a 2-inch paradigm shift, but I just want to inject here. Like you were saying, we had this conversation offline talking about stuff. And when you said you can't manage stress, all right, that's like a 2-inch paradigm shift, changes everything. I remember hearing that and going, whoa, wait, that's right. That's the first thing that came to my mind. Oh, that's right. Why is that right? Actually, I'm not sure why that's right, which is why we're having this conversation. But it landed in a way that made me question everything. You know, people come in and something's going on, this and that, blah, 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 whatever. And we will hear in at least 50% of our patients, well, you know, I got stress. And for years, I've always wondered to myself, well, what does that actually mean for you? So this is super helpful.
It's helpful. But, you know, what I tell patients is I say you can't manage stress, but you can manage vitality. Now, what's so good about being here with you, right, is that we have shorthand for that. And so we can speak in our shorthand language, right, is that like we can manage our chi. So, and the big piece to this is, you know, establishing you as an individual, what your chi budget is. Right? So like how much chi you have to spend on things. So your chi budget is going to be different than my chi budget. Now, my old business partner, you know, a lot of us are academic trained. He was apprentice trained. And he was apprentice trained with this Korean Taoist master. And he trained with a guy for like 12, 15 years. Okay, cool. So doing qigong every day, eating right every day, doing like all those things where it's just like, dude, you're so fucking annoying because you're so like standard perfect in the medicine. And his wife was a yogi who started a bone broth company. Wife gets pregnant. Delivers a 9-pound baby breech naturally. Oh. Okay, so that baby won the fucking Jing lottery. That baby won the Jing lottery. She came out being able to take down pit bulls. Like at like 6 months, she's like, I eat you for breakfast. She's just like, she's going to live to be like 200 years old. She got the Jing lottery. She's going to party her tits off like through her 20s and be fine. She's going to be fine, right? I did not win the Jing lottery. Most of us didn't win that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We start in different places.
And it's really, you know, important to say like, okay, like how much chi can I expend you know, during the day before I hit taxation, because for us, the medicine is about taxation. And once you've hit taxation, it's too late. Now you're having to repair, right? And so often our teachings are around taxation, 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 and actually has its kind of own diagnostic category. But, you know, when we're trying to quote unquote manage stress, we go beyond the point of taxation. And now we're into the jerk, we're into the will, just to keep going.
And that wears on the kidney in a big way.
Big way. And now you're taking like, you know, you're using that credit card, right? We talk about that. But, you know, so we can talk about the ways to like chi budget, but it's also important to identify like the types of stress. So like one type of stress is like the acute stress, where it's just like, ah, dude, cheetah. That's good stress because it actually revs the body up, your vision narrows, the adrenaline is going. And so that could be like roller coaster stress. Like,
or you've got a big project or you've got something that you want to do. You don't know how to do it yet. It can motivate us to a certain degree. Any athlete who knows anything about performance knows that a certain amount of stress makes you way sharper, way better.
Yeah. So stress is not a bad thing. We're actually wired for stress.
Mm-hmm. It can be helpful. Give me a deadline. Don't give me extra time. Give me a deadline. I'm much better with a deadline. Is there stress? Yeah, there's stress. Narrows the focus, brings the intention more into alignment with what I want to do.
And, you know, people who don't have stress in their lives, because of the wiring, they create stress. These are the drama queens. Like, they actually just create stress around them to have something to push up against, right? Because the nervous system needs something to push up against for that tensile strength. So, you know, and we see those patients sometimes, or, you know, we're so bored. It's like, I'm so bored. I'm going to go start a fight with my husband. And it's just like, what the fuck? Like, things are so calm. I'm going to go sabotage. And it's like, you're sabotaging because, like, you need that tensile something to push against.
I want to stop for a moment in this word sabotage because I hear it all the time. I hear people say, oh, I'm sabotaging myself.
That's different, though.
But they're not sabotaging themselves. What we're talking about right now, if you don't have enough chi, if you don't have enough like tensegrity, okay, and you need more tensegrity in your system, you're not sabotaging yourself. You're actually giving yourself a little bit of a chi boost by having something to rub up against. Now, is it helpful for your relationship? Probably not. Is it helpful for you in the long run for what you want to do? It may go counter to certain parts of you, but it's also serving what I'm going to call a proper physiologic function. I think we should recognize it for that.
Oh, 100%. So I like obscure cultural references. I think you know that. So do you remember that movie Along Came Polly with Ben Stiller?
No.
Like it was like early aughts, right? So it's like Ben Stiller and Jennifer Aniston, and like Ben Stiller's character in the movie is he's an actuator, right? So it's his job to assess people to see what their risk is for life insurance. And there's this character named Leland who's kind of a, I don't know, like he's kind of like a ripoff of like Richard Branson. He's this like, so this guy's trying to get life insurance, but they can't insure the guy because he's like jumping off buildings and he's just like, hey, let's go swimming naked with sharks. And Ben Stiller's like, the insurance is going to be hard on that. But the guy was an adrenaline junkie. The guy was putting himself in situations over and over and over and over again of high acute stress to get that like chi bang, right? Or like going to like a scary movie. And when you jump, it's that chi bang. Like people are addicted to it. They like it. But part of that too, though, is that they're not chi budgeting in other places.
Aha. Uh-huh. So maybe we're using our chi bang when we should be using chi budgeting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just fire your shot and then you're kind of done. And it feels good, right? And then sometimes there's so much stress like in the nervous system that when it fires and they jump from the shock or the roller coaster or the bungee jumping or whatever, the fight with the husband, they actually relax afterwards because it discharges. So that's one type of stress. You know, another type is it's called episodic acute stress. So that's a frequent occurrence of acute stress. You know, and a lot of people who often the subjective feeling of like anxiety, short-tempered, that kind of things, they find themselves in acute stress like over and over and over and over and over again.
Groundhog Day.
Mm-hmm. So, and then there's chronic stress, and that's the stress that doesn't easily go away. And I think like a lot of us right now, like with quarantine fatigue and, you know, at the time of this taping, right, a lot of us are like quarantine fatigued and just like exhausted. And it's just this ongoing chronic low grade stress where like our kidney yang just like, it's like a drippy faucet, right? It just like goes. And then there's the physical stress. So that could be like surgery, you know, and labor, like whatever. But then there's psychological stress, which is our seven affects that we talk about. And then the last one is psychosocial stress. So that can come from relationship, marriage, but those are sociological stresses that each of us face a little bit differently. Like as a woman or a person of color or anything that's kind of like cross-sectional, there's going to be a different type of psychosocial stress faced by those individuals just because of racism,
where they happen to be
in the spectrum of life.
In the spectrum of life. Where you are in the chocolate chip cookie.
Yes.
100. Are you in the gooey center? You out on the crunchy edges? Where are you?
I think you and I are a little crunchy edge, but but you know, but that being said, if you notice, you know, every single one of these types of stress, unless to your point, we're internally generating it for a purpose, are outside of us and are outside our control. And these are things we can't manage, but we tell ourselves that we have to manage that. We don't manage stress, or we can't manage stress, or I need to manage stress, or blah, 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 blah. Whatever the fuck it is you're telling yourself, right? But being human is about taking a punch in the face, going down and getting back up.
Resiliency.
How well can you get back up and how fast?
Because we're going to get the punch, right?
It's coming. Sorry, Chief. It's coming. You know, that left hook is coming. And so, you know, if you've chi budgeted well, it's easier to get up off the floor. If you've chi budgeted poorly, or, you know, and let's be honest, like sometimes chi budgeting, especially when there's chronic stress, means you don't eat the whole carton of ice cream. Right? Like sometimes like chi budgeting is like, well, maybe I'll eat like half of it to save my spleen a little bit. But there, you know, and we'll talk about chi budgeting here in a second.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. There's things that we can do that build it up, and there's things that we can do, let's just call it damage control. We're going to do some damage here. I'm getting something out of it, but we're going to mitigate it. Let's call it mitigation, not damage control.
So that brings up another really good point. So like in the chi budget, and again, this is so individual for each person. And for us as practitioners, that's part of our job is understanding like someone's constitution, right? So someone who's like a liver constitution versus a heart constitution versus a spleen constitution, what's going to juice them up is going to be different for each of them, right? And what's going to tax them is going to be different for each of them. So sometimes, you know, you get that like super liver chi person that comes in and it's just like, dude, you need to go for a fucking run. Like you need to take on marathon running. You need to take on cardio. Like, I don't know what it is. You have to burn this off. But then you have that spleen chi deficient person. It's just like, man, if you try and run a 5K, like we're going to have to peel you off the pavement.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So,
yeah, and well, this is the beauty of the way our medicine gives us these lenses and prisms for looking at things, because two people can come in with stress and one is get out there and move your ass, and the other one is you need to rest and recover.
Mm-hmm. Like you're in
taxation. You need to build things up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then the question is like, where do we build those things up? So part of that is understanding in the chi budget that, you know, there are some things that juice us up, right? And things that juice us up could be like a good conversation, or like things that juice us up could be, you know, like a really just like sexy, delicious meal, right? Like a meal that's just like a feast for like a good movie, like a good book. Like there's so many things that juice us up, but you know, we also have to look up, like, is it juicing up? You know, I hate this triad, but again, it's just for the structure of this conversation, right? But is it juicing up the body, the mind, the spirit?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a fair enough triad. It's something we're all pretty familiar with. And I mean, a lot falls under that rubric.
Mm-hmm. And some things will like juice us up like a 3-for-1 or at least like a 2-for-1. And so I have this patient, right? I mentioned her earlier. She's in her 70s and she gets real wound up, like real wound up, right?
She's a New Yorker, right?
Well, so not only is she a New Yorker, but she's a New Yorker who's an actress. I am an actress, and she's in her 70s, and, you know, God bless her, like, she's just, like, fucking seen everything, but she gets so wound up, and she comes in the office, and, like, she just sucks the air out of the office, right, like, in the intensity, and her life is so stressful, and a lot of what's going on in her life has to do professionally, like, the marriage, like, blah, 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 like, all these things, right, and so part of my job is harm reduction with her and actually teaching her how to like manage like a lot of these things. And so, but when she's really wound up, she comes in and I just kind of look at her, and people who know me or like students who know me, like I have a dead look with blue eyes that like sometimes if I'm annoyed, like it just like cuts, right? And I cut her with my look one time and I didn't realize it. And she goes, I need to calm the fuck down. I have to calm the fuck down. I can calm the fuck down. And I was like, yeah, girl, you need to calm the fuck down. And she's like, I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. I'm like, great. Like, do it. Like, you could do it. But you could actually watch like the temperature, like the chi temperature her in her like drop, like as she kind of like de-escalated in this moment. And like the big conversation that we had this week, you know, I always like it when these conversations are relevant and they show up over and over again, right? So the big conversation that we had this week is that her marriage, it's a chi suck. Her chi budget is just going like towards this living situation that's just not going to change, right? And so a lot of times, you know, in this chi budget, and when I say budget, like, I mean that, like, very specifically. It's like in a financial budget, you have to pay, like, your mortgage, you have to pay utilities, there are things you have to pay that you don't have a choice, and you have to budget for those things. And then you have things that are discretionary spending with disposable income. And some of us have more disposable income than others. So, you know, in your chi budget, like, if you have to go to work to do these things and you have to generate income, that's part of the chi budget, right, that you have to budget for. But then your discretionary income, like how you're going to blow the rest of that chi, you got to decide. And so for her, this living situation that she's in her 70s, they're not going to get divorced. Like, you know, it's a rough situation. But, you know, her chi budget has to go to that. So a big piece of it is like, well, if you're going to spend your chi budget there, how can we add to that? You know, and where can you look for places to do that? Now, the good thing is, like, a lot of people talk about, like, oh, there's no, like, user manual for being human. And it's like, yes, there is. It's called the Huangdi Neijing. That's exactly what it is.
If you can understand that thing. That thing's not so easy to understand.
Oh, no. And, you know, like...
You know, I mean, even people in Asia, even Chinese people, they're like, I can't understand that. I'll tell you my favorite version of the Huangdi Neijing.
Yeah.
Are the versions that I saw in Taiwan that were the comic book editions of the Huangdi Neijing. Because it was like, I can understand this shit. And it was in like simple enough Chinese that I could read it too.
Yeah.
But the comic book editions... In addition to the fun illustrations,
yeah,
the thing that was fun is it did distill it down to certain basic things, right? It took away that like, ooh, you know, the classic. It was just like, it's a fucking comic book. And there's useful information. Here, kids, read this.
Yep. Okay. Well, you know, but like the first chap, you know, like what I like about the book, right, is, you know, it's a conversation, you know, between like two people, like Chibo.
It was one of the older podcasts around. It's like one of the first podcasts.
Oh, 100%, right? I still want to know who the fuck Chibo was, and I want to know what he was smoking, because Chibo was onto something, right? So the teacher Chibo, right, like gives the information to like, you know, his illustrious student, the Yellow Emperor. And then the Yellow Emperor, like any good student's a fucking little smart ass that asks like hard questions. And Chibo's like,
What about that?
And Chibo's like, there's an answer for that, you little shit. So, but like, it's such a good conversation, right? Like one of the first conversations is, listen, dude, Chibo, teacher, why is it that back in the day, people lived so long? He was asking the same fucking thing that we asked today, right? Like, why is it like back in the day? Like, people
how come it was better back then?
It's always better back then, right? Like, people aren't, it's always better back then. Huang Di says, how do they do it? And Chibo says, well, they lived in accordance with nature.
Right. They weren't commuting to work.
Yeah. And then the rest of the book is like how you live in accordance with the nature. Now, some of it's like a little bit like, I don't understand like that cultural context, or maybe something got mistranslated along the way. And like, it kind of came out weird on like our end. Right. Fine. But, you know, this living in accordance with nature, and even in the Huang Di, it's like, you know, you have like certain behaviors that are going to serve you when those behaviors are done seasonally, and you're going to have certain behaviors that tax you. And that taxation is going to show up in certain ways. And as a practitioner, like, this is what we have to watch for. So this pulse shows up in spring, mofo is dead in fucking fall. This like tongue shows up in fall, he's dead by winter. But he's just talking about like qi and qi movement, and like how that erratic qi is going to show up, and like what those kind of hallmarks are of that. And then how do we harmonize, like, as the practitioner? How do we get in there and just be like, okay, well, how do we keep them alive through winter if this is what's showing up now?
Super big thing, especially if you're in the north of China.
Yep. And now, does all of this, like, translate across time and across continents? No, but, like, 90% of it does. Like, if we can decode it.
Well, I think the principles make a lot of sense. Right? In accordance of nature will mean different things in different environments.
So, like, here in the Northeast, right? So, again, in New York, we got hit with COVID in March, like, real, real hard. So, you know, New York was one of the first places to go into quarantine, and I closed the practice March 15th. But I switched to telemedicine pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And one of...
You're lucky you've got a practice that really fits with that.
Yeah, like I do, which is good. And but you know, like when it hit, like I realized, Marco, like I'd realized I've been probably seeing COVID since January. But at the time it was just like, oh, this is like a weird flu and like people aren't bouncing back. Like, what the hell is this, right? I'm here like trying to figure out like my shit in New York. I'm just like, how do I keep my people out of the hospital, off ventilators? How do I keep them alive? Like, what are we doing? The supply chains are crashing, right? So I could write like the banginest, like best, like most beautiful, like amazing, like poetic formula, doesn't matter one iota if I can't get it to people. So like trying to hack the system and like how do we do this? And who do I know with like a private apothecary in like Wisconsin that can ship or whatever it was, right? So one of my really good friends is based in Florida and she's an herbalist too and was just such like a huge support. And we were talking and I was like, girl, this shit's gonna come to Florida at some point. Like, get ready. And she was just like, do you think? I'm like, I'm telling
buckle
you,
up.
Buckle up, bitch. It's coming. And so bitch buckled up and she like got like this apothecary, right? And she was so ready for it. She's got this beautiful apothecary of like all the things she needs, like blah, 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 blah. All her patients are showing up with COVID in the gut. All her patients down in Florida, she calls me and she's like, the fuck? Like, do you want the shit down here? I'll send it to you. Like, your people need it. My people don't. Now, is this because, like, the virus mutated a little? Maybe. Like, is this Wen Bing versus Sean Han Lun, like, style north versus south type stuff? Maybe. There's a lot of maybes around this.
Well, and I mean, this really, to me, demonstrates the importance of environment. That COVID in one context, it'll show up like this. And then COVID in another context, because of the way people are and because of the way the environment is and the humidity or lack of, or, and this is the beauty of Chinese medicine is that it does take all this stuff into consideration. So in some ways we shouldn't be too surprised when that kind of thing happens. It's like, yep, we probably should have seen that one coming, but you know, it's hard to know when you don't know what's coming.
Oh, hindsight's 20/20, right? And like,
no, not always. I find hindsight is often quite not reliable, which gives rise to continued current problems because we're not looking back in 2020.
Well, but what I'm saying is, like, when we do look back,
but when we do, yeah, it's clear.
When we do look back, it's clear, right? Mm-hmm. When we do look back, and we do look back, like, with an objective eye versus a subjective eye, and it's just like, oh, the red flags were there.
Mm-hmm. There it
right,
was.
Right, there it was.
Like, I knew to buy that Zoom stock in February. Damn it.
I'm still kicking myself for, like, the Facebook stock offerings. I'm still kicking myself on that one. But, you know, but to come back to this, like, Qi budget piece to it, right? You know, like, with the Qi budget, it's just like, well, how do we Qi budget? And one thing is, like, understanding your constitution. Constitutionally, like, what can you manage? One of the things that drives me fucking crazy, like, in the acupuncture community, is there's this kind of, like, I don't want to, like, something, like, really crass came to mind. I'm going to skip that. But there's
you're going to skip something crass? Come on.
It's real crass. Okay, it's real crass. Like, there's this kind of dick waving around, like, look at how big my practice is, how many people I see per week. I see 150 people a week. I see 80 people a week. I see whatever. But you know what? My Qi budget, my personal Qi budget, I cap out at 35.
Okay. Yes. So I want to say something about this. Because I see it too. It's like, okay, whatever works for you, okay? So I think there's a big misconception that a busy practice is a successful practice.
100%. Okay. Agreed.
I think it's really important to know what is your mark on what you would call success. Now, maybe it is seeing 150 people a week and you're like, you know, rocking in lots of money and you got that nice new Lexus and you know, you can like, offer courses and show your tax returns and, you know, brag about the money that you're making. I'm not bragging. I'm just showing you that you can do it, right? I've seen that kind of thing as well. If that's what your gig is, okay, fine.
That's great. That's not what I'm not knocking. But we're like,
But what I'm saying is know what is right for you. That's the point. Know what's right for you.
And it took me a long time to cop to like, oh my God, 35 patients. So like, I don't know. But really, like, that's where, like, financially I'm stable, psychologically I'm stable, emotionally I'm stable.
Are you living the life you want?
I told you.
That's the question I have. Are you living the life you want? Is this the life you want?
Yeah, I just told you, right? So my mark of success is a Japanese toilet. Like, since when I lived in Japan, I was like, I know I will have made it when I own a Japanese toilet. And we just installed one last night. I was like, I made it. I can retire now.
You're finally an adult.
I'm finally an adult, right? But yeah, but like to understand those markers and I personally know like these people with these big practices and blah, 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 blah. Their chi is just different. I have another friend here in New York. I swear to God, she cracked the code on this. Girlfriend cracked the code. And I consider her the most successful acupuncturist you'll never hear about. And
maybe we should get her on the podcast then.
Maybe like I'll reach out to her. She's fabulous, but like girlfriend cracked the code, and meaning she's financially stable. Everything's getting paid off. Student loans are paid off. Like apartment is paid off. Things are paid off. And for her 40th, she decided to every month travel for 10 days. So she'd go Costa Rica for 10 days. She'd go, you know, do whatever. And so
every month. She takes off a third of the month.
Uh-huh. Well, she did that for her 40th. And her practice was stable. Her practice was fine. Like, people came. You know, even up to this point, you know, with COVID, it's like, what do you do? She wound up renting a house out on Montauk in Long Island for the summer and goes out for, you know, a week or so at a time. And, like, her patients are calibrated to that schedule. She has savings in the bank. And, like, she's not seeing a bajillion people a week. She doesn't bring herself into taxation ever. She doesn't bring herself into taxation in this work-life balance. She's healthy. She's harmonized. You know, of course, like, she's human and she's, like, having, like, her own, you know, like, life issues, right? But, like,
but she's got a good Qi budget to deal with them.
She's got a great Qi budget to deal with it. Is she out there, you know, promoting XY? No. Because that's not like her marker of success. So we mark for different things, but part of my constitution is teaching. That's just who I am. I've been teaching since my 20s in some way. And for me, teaching actually juices me up. It's not a spend, right? Because I wind up in that positive feedback loop with students, where other people teaching, like just the thought of teaching, right? It's enough to like take the chi out of their face and they'll collapse and, you know, they'll do whatever. The first question you have to ask is what juices you up and what taxes you? And to be like real, real honest about that. And there's no right answer, because this is about you. This isn't about like would, should, could, what like this person is saying, you know, that person is saying. Like, you have to sit down and have like a real hard look at things and say like, wow, like when I hit 40 patients a week, like I start forgetting things. My brain gets kind of weird. And there's something called a stress personality. And this is another thing that like I encourage people to investigate and look at. What a stress personality is they are behaviors that you will start to exhibit where your body is registering stress, but your mind might not be registering it yet. So meaning, for example, like I swear like a sailor, like I swear at patients, I swear at like, you know, student, like whatever. But if I start swearing at babies and I'm like, that's a fucking cute baby, you know, that language, when my language, my language is already inappropriate, but like when my language inappropriately ratchets it up, like
when you start swearing at babies, you
when I start
know,
swearing at babies and
know,
grandmas, I'm like, shit's up, man. I must be like fucking stress. I'm fucking stressed. I didn't realize it. I'm just like, fuck, I gotta fucking do something about this, man. And so like it's, but is that like, for me, it's like that language piece, right? Or, you know, I'm from Minnesota, like I'm a Midwest girl, and you know, we have casserole. And if I want green bean casserole, tater tots on it, dude, I'm in taxation. but that craving.
Are you putting that creamy mushroom sauce on it too?
What do you mean? Oh, it's in it.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah.
Cream of mushroom.
And you know, some crazy Midwest shit. Yeah, we had that for Thanksgiving every year. Oh, it's like traditional.
Oh, yeah. Like, and maybe with a side can of like canned fruit for dessert, like that fruit cocktail, right? That's just all in corn syrup. And it's like, yeah, that sounds real good right now. And then it's like, fuck, I'm stressed. When I come home, and like, and you know, but you might not even recognize it. It's just like I'll come home and I'll be making it, and my husband's like, "Oh, rough day," and I'm like, "Oh, I guess I had a rough day. I guess so. Like, I'm making the casserole. Yeah. Like I'm making like the loop, the Sunday.
You better
loop
not get between me and that casserole. You're gonna have a rough day too.
Oh no, you'll be dead. You'll be dead. So you know, so like that stress personality piece to it, right? Like you need to start like recognizing like the hallmarks.
So how do you know when you've gone off the rails?
Mm-hmm. Well, No. These are red flags.
Red flags. They're not off the rails yet.
No. These are red flags that start to show up that predict that you're about to go off the rails, right? But they're little things. So once you're off the rails, you're off the rails, right? Once you say, I'm stressed, that's it, right? So, but these are things where, again, some of them might be like subconscious behaviors or like certain feelings or, you know, if I start perseverating a little bit, about like, oh, that conversation I had in high school with like that one guy. God, I was such an idiot. Like I should have said like X, Y, Z. Like that weird like past perseveration for me is another hallmark that I'm starting to be stressed. I just, my body might just not be registering it. So, but what's that showing is like my chi budget's coming down.
It's like that little light in the car.
Yeah, it's a check
engine. You should go get some gas.
Yeah, it's a check engine light.
You should go get some gas.
Ding, go to your acupuncturist. Check engine.
Ding, you're making casserole with tater tots on it.
Yeah, but doesn't that sound good right now? Sorry, it's like the COVID-19. Like,
yeah, I was never a fan of that creamy, mushroom creamy thing. It always weirded me out.
It's so good. It's so good.
Mac and cheese I could do, but not...
Yeah, not that.
Not that. Yeah, it was too...
Not like
too,
Waldorf salad. That's not
too
really a
gooey,
salad.
Gooey, man. Can't do the so gooey stuff. Ugh.
So in this chi budget thing, like to think of chi as transactional. And so when we start thinking of chi as a transaction, we can start to see like where are we spending it and where are we losing it. Now, when I talk with students about practice management, I'm going to go on a, like a little bit tangent, but it's going to bring us back here for a second. Okay. So when I talk about practice management with students, right, you know, and we talk about like, how much do you charge per patient? That's always like a big conversation. Like, how much do I charge? And a lot of students are just like, well, I think I, you know, I'm a fresh graduate, so I don't know that much. So I'm just going to charge this like little itty bitty like amount because I think that's what I'm worth. And it's just like, it's not about worth. It's not about worth. And it's not even about like fair market value. What it's about is, number one, how much does it cost to be you? How much does it cost to be you? So how much every month do you have to spend on insurance, on rent, on utilities, on student loans, on your bar tab, on groceries, like whatever it is, right? How much does it cost to be you? Like you have to get that number down. And sometimes like it's a shocking number, right? It's just like, oh my God, I didn't realize it cost me like 10,000 grand a month just to like be me.
Oh my God, I'm in the top 3%. I had no idea.
Yeah, right? It's just like, oh, like, I'm an expensive bitch. Nice, right? So it's like, I didn't think I was high maintenance, but I guess I'm a little high maintenance. And so you get this big fat number. Okay, so that's what it costs to be you. Then you have to add 30% because bitch got to pay taxes, right?
Right. This is the thing a lot of people forget. There's a bunch of money goes through your hands. It was never yours. 30% of it. You're like, I'm holding this for the government.
Yeah. So 30% of it's taxes. And then you have to add 20% to that because, well, you want to go on vacation and, you know, you want to be able to like keep the office open and blah, 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 blah. Okay, whatever it is, right? So you have this big fat number. I'm going to just, for, again, sake of easy math, I'm going to say that big fat number with the cost of you, your taxes, and 20% savings is $10,000. That means that you have to be clearing $2,500 a week. So if you see 10 patients, you need to be charging $250 a patient. That's what establishes your prices. And so how much it costs to be you, like if you're, you know, renting in Minneapolis versus Austin versus San Francisco versus New York versus whatever, like that's already, that's good, that's going to be built into that adjustment. Right? So, you know, now let's say you're just like, well, I'm not going to charge $250. Like, that's kind of whatever.
Well, I guess you're moving to Minnesota then.
Or you see more patients.
Or you see more patients.
You see more patients, right? So what you have to do then is say like, okay, so I'm going to charge $100 a treatment. Again, we're doing easy math, right? I'm going to charge $100 a treatment. Math for acupuncturists. So I'm going to charge $100 of treatment, which means I need to see 25 people. That's my minimum. My minimum per week that I have to clear in terms of patient numbers is 25 people a week. Can I do that? And you have to look at like facilities. You have to look at, you know, like if you're renting 2 days or 5 days, you have your own. There's so many things to consider. Like, how are you going to see those 25 patients? Well, I don't know, bitch. That's up to you.
Because you got to see 25 patients. You could see them all in one day if you want.
Yeah, and then you go to, you know, like fucking Costa Rica the other 6 days. I don't know. But that's part of the chi budget. Now, if I saw it like my busiest days, I'm good. Now, like I know like my, again, you can laugh at me, I don't care. But like at my busiest days, like once I hit 14 patients, I'm tapped. I'm tapped. Like I'm good and I can still go home and I'm not wanting that casserole quite yet. But like 15 patients and I'm eating casserole. Because I'm stressed. My chart notes aren't that good. You know, like, I start forgetting things. Patients are like, oh, you didn't follow up on this. Like,
no, I hate that. You're like, open up the chart notes. What did I do last time? Fuck, I got no idea what I did last time.
Oh, they said it was brilliant, but, like, I don't know who that was who did that.
Yeah, I was like, do that thing again. Well, let's see what I did. I got no idea what I did.
That was a good job. Good job, Thursday Heidi, right? Like, says Monday Heidi, who's just like, I'm not really feeling that, bitch. You were so smart, Thursday Heidi, but Monday Heidi, you're the worst. But it's that chi budget. And so what will happen, too, is ideally you have that schedule that you open up the schedule and you have 10 patients and you're just like, these are the best people in the world. These people are fucking awesome. Like, I get to see Brian and Phoebe and Bart, but these are my favorite people. And then you leave charged for the day. That's the practice that we should all want and have versus you open up the schedule and you're like, fucking, just dirtbag, douchebag, piece of shit is like here again. God, right? And then you have like five patients and you're exhausted because of like that person that's coming in, right?
Because they're not the right ones. I can remember early in my career thinking, well, I'm an acupuncturist. I can treat anybody and I should.
No.
There are some people that like, they, you know, every time they come in, they cost me. They don't help me pay my costs. The chi budget gets blown out for whatever reason. I'm not saying they're bad people. I'm saying it's not a good fit for who I am. You got to take some of that into consideration.
One of the misnomers about New York, right? Like everyone's just like, oh my God, like you guys are all in competition with each other. You know how many people are in New York? There's like what, like call it like 14 million. My acupuncture license is at number 4,000. I think we have 5,000 licensees. So not all those licensures are like still active and not all of them are like working in the city. So 14 million for 4,000 people, it's fine. When I've covered other people's practices because of like maternity coverage or vacation or whatever, like at the end of it, I was like, God, your patients suck. Your patients are the worst because it's the right fit for that practitioner.
Exactly. And part of our job is to find out what kind of practitioner are we? What do we need? What kind of practitioner am I? And trust that there's someone out there for everybody.
And so if your practice is part of the stress equation for you.
And it is at some point.
It is. We've all had days where like.
We all have days. I mean, anytime you're running a business, there's going to be days where it goes well. And you're like, man, look at this. I got it dialed in. There's other days like, what the fuck was I thinking?
So we were deemed essential workers in New York at the end of May. And I decided to open up the practice, right? And, you know, God bless my brother. Like, you like that siren in the back?
Yeah, no, I'm digging it. Yeah, New York, baby.
New York.
Yeah.
Authentic. So authentic New York. So my brother was furloughed, and my brother said, I'm going to come in, I'm going to help you with the practice, like, to figure this out. So we have to figure out CDC standards. We have to figure out how to keep you safe, how to keep patients safe, like, what we have, you know, all these things, right? So we went in, and, like, we stripped down the, and by the way, like I lost the office too. Like in the middle of all of this, like I lost the office. Actually, one of the best things to happen to me, but I'll come back to that in a second. So
isn't that odd how, I mean, I've seen this happen time and time again in my life. I hear it with other people. Something happens, it's fucking horrific. World falls apart. Little ways down the road, you go, man, that was a lucky break.
Oh, totally lucky. Because I had a 4,000 in Manhattan. Right? Who the fuck does this? Apparently I do. But like, so we had a 4,000 square foot, 12 treatment room office that was mine and a business partner's. But the business partner just...
You're such an underachiever.
Yeah, right? You should have gone bigger.
Heidi, the problem is you should have gone big.
I know. Like, right? Go big or go home. Arr. So we have this center. And of course, like, when we get shut down, baby can't pay rent, you know, and landlord and, you know, like all the business things, right? So as like the center was closing, you know, and I was having to close it down and my brother was there and my business partner, for various reasons, just like kind of disappeared like a fart in the wind. Like, I don't know where that guy went. So it was just like... me shutting this office down as the practitioners that I worked with, some of them left New York, like moved to New Mexico, you know, like just left the city. And, you know, I have these patients and I'm trying to figure out like how to take care of the patients and keep them safe and me safe and, you know, CDC and like all of this, right? When I first started seeing patients back in the office in this like stripped down version, and you saw me at one point, we were talking, right? I had my ninja scrubs, like my mask, like I had, you know, washing my hands until my nails were breaking, but people were coming in, people wanted treatment. I'm just like, I'm here to serve. That's what, you know, that's what I'm going to do. And I came home one day and I sat down in the kitchen and my husband wasn't home. And then he came home and he walked in and I'm sitting there staring into space in my ninja scrubs in the dark. And he was like, are you okay? I was like, I don't think I want to be an acupuncturist anymore. I was like, I don't think I want to do this. I was like, I can't do this. I was too tired to even cry. And he was just like, you've been doing this for 15, 20 years. I'm like, I know, I think I'm done. And he was like, you're not done. He's just like, you've had your passion knocked out of you. So go close the office, finish like closing the office, see like only the patients that actually like need you, not the patients who are like, oh, I missed you. Like the patients who is just like, that we're actually like helping to keep alive in some way. And he was like, see the patients that like need you. But like, I needed that like exterior someone to say like, you're in a stress personality right now. And that's what's speaking. It's not you who's speaking.
And that stress personality can't hear all the other resources that you've got. You can't, the stress personality can't hear the vitality.
No, it can't hear the vitality. And not only that stress personality should not be making decisions.
That's for sure. I've tried that. I've tried doing that.
How'd it work out for you?
You don't want that motherfucker making the decisions, I'll tell you.
It's
like,
no.
That guy? No. It's like, no, dude, go for a bike ride. Do anything. Go watch some net. Watch a little Umbrella Academy. You'll feel better.
But, no, for us, it's Outlander. You know, like, just go watch, like, garbage TV. So this actually brings up, like, a really good point about how when we're down and we're in the stress personality and it's all these things that like we can't control, like blah, 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 blah. How do we recharge? And so there's a difference between like watching TV and doing like a Shavasana. Meaning there's passively recharging and actively recharging. So that passive engagement though, it's actually not passive. So, you know, when you sit down on the couch and you watch, like, you're just like, I'm going to watch all of Star Wars or all of Game of Thrones. I'm going to just like fucking Jon Snow this shit until like I can't see straight. And you sit down on the couch and you HBO it and you're just whatever. And then like 13 hours later, you come off the couch, you're actually more exhausted than when you went down. That's the quote unquote passive, like being passively active versus actively passive. And so this passively active is actually will drain the chi budget, right? So it looks like we're doing something to like relax, like, oh, I'm just going to pay like Gardenscapes on the phone or, you know, whatever like people are doing on the phone, or I'm just going to scroll through social media because that's going to help me like detach and give my brain something like light to think about this, not thinking about like politics or the world or, you know, like whatever, right? So that passive activity actually sucks chi. Because how good do you feel like after you come off of Instagram for like a 2-hour binge? You don't. Versus being actively passive, where that's
like meditating.
It's our meditation. Mm-hmm. It's our
writing, painting, playing some music.
Well, we go into the zone and we look up and it's just like, God, like 4 hours like went by, but like you're not taxed from it.
In fact, you're restored.
You're restored. Mm-hmm. And so being actively passive, you know, like in yoga, one thing we talk about is that we do yoga to meditate. And we do it so that we have the strength. Because, you know, and you've done this too. Like you've studied meditation. Like you do a 3-hour meditation. If your chi is shot, like you're not going to be able to sit it. You're just not going to be able to sit it. Like it's just not going to happen. So it requires like a different level of like active engagement to remain passive. That's one that restores. So it's the return on investment, the ROI, right? So the return on investment of sitting there and like meditating for however long you're able to do it, you know, and the longer you do it, the bigger the return on investment. But like, are you going to jump into a 3-hour meditation if you've never meditated before? No, you're not calibrated for it.
Well, not only that, but most people, if they haven't meditated, they sit down for 5 minutes and they realize their mind is, you know, in insane asylums. How can anybody meditate when it's so noisy in here? I mean, you got to kind of work up to recognizing what a mess it is and then get some comfort with that.
Or what you do is you go knock the squirrels out. And so you knock the squirrels out through something that brings a certain level of tensile, good stress to the nervous system. So when I teach Kundalini, right, because I do like teacher training sometimes, I do this thing. Oh God, I'm such a bitch. So I do this thing, right, where I put them into a 7-minute down facing dog. you think you can do 7-minute down facing dog? I've had people throw up on me. I'm like, you're going to throw up? Here's a fucking bucket. Don't come out of it. Right. And so
I'm like the CrossFit of yoga.
No. I mean, it's not hardcore like that, because what I'm trying to do, right?
What are you talking about? Downward dog and bar fall while you're doing it. Come on.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty intense.
It is intense. But listen, when you go into a downward dog like that, imagine that position. So your palms are on the ground, your feet are on the ground, you're in a triangle. So what you're doing is you're pulling the taiyang. You're pulling the entire taiyang, and like you're forcing the shaoyang to stabilize, and the entire vagus nerve, the sciatic nerve, all of that, like you're pulling. And so it's going to happen in that pull, and this is good stress, right? So in that stress, your body will start to shake at some point, and you're going to feel it shaking like all the way into your earlobes. So the body starts to shake, and it's just like all of that you've been carrying starts to discharge, and you throw them into child's pose, right, which is like the curled pose, and they're going to want to go to sleep. They're going to want to stay in that, and you can't let them stay in it. So you put them in Shavasana, which is corpse pose, and you let them like lay down flat, and you let them lay down flat for like a good 30 minutes. Because that is being actively passive.
After you've already tuned up the nervous system a bit, you put some tensegrity in there so that when you hit that passive Shavasana, you've actually got tensegrity and energy on the inside. You're not doing it out of fatigue.
No. And so then what happens? Then you pop them into meditation after the Shavasana. Because the squirrels, like all the insane asylum, like has been like put to bed so that you can actually like hit point zero. You can actually like go into yin tong. Like you can actually hear like your soul speaking versus hearing like your ego, like kind of middle management speaking.
Why are middle managers always such dicks?
They're such dicks. They're such dicks. It's just like, I'm the boss. It's just like, you're a petty tyrant. That's what you are. You know, and it's just like, I don't need my mind as this petty tyrant. You know, and but that's like, you know, like that conversation, like I was just telling you, like the conversation I had with my husband when I was just like, I don't want to do this anymore. It was the petty tyrant speaking. The petty tyrant was like, I'm tapped, which is fine, but the petty tyrant shouldn't be making those decisions. Instead, it's just like, okay, like you're taxed. So we went into taxation. Michael, for me, like the big lesson in this is I tried to control the stress. I tried to control the office. I tried to control the patients. Like I tried to control the CDC shit. Like
stress is not manageable.
It's not manageable. It's not manageable. And so it was such like, it's just like, fuck, man, I got to walk the talk. God damn it. You know, like, what a bitch that is. And it's just like, oh, I had to listen to my own advice. Fine.
Can I just get the comic book version of this?
Yeah. Like, isn't there an easier way to do this? Don't you have herbs for this? Like something.
And the answer is, some things are an inside job.
Some things are an inside job, and yes, there are herbs for it, and yes, there are acupuncture for it, and yes, you know, like we can.
But that stuff is not going to do the work.
No, but it's going
to. It can facilitate.
Supplement.
But it can supplement. Talk to us about, like, what's doing the work then? What's doing the work here?
So, this again, I'm going to come back to, like, everything that we have in the toolbox of Chinese medicine. I don't remember if I talked about this on the other podcast or not, but we have the 5 branches of Chinese medicine that we cop to, that we talk about, and we have the 3 branches that like make us look batshit crazy, right? So, you know, we have the acupuncture, the herbs, we have diet, we have movement, which is like qigong, you know, whatever. Like for me, it's yoga. And then we have tuina. So those are the 5 that we often teach, we talk about, whatever. So the other 3 that we kind of keep on the DL a little bit because we don't want to sound too cray cray. But the other 3 are going to be meditation, feng shui, and astrology. Because meditation is how you move internally. Feng shui is how you move locally and what affects you locally, right? And astrology is how you move and what affects you universally. So you need to look at those 3 things. And out of all of those 8, there's something in there that's going to help add to the qi budget. So whether that's the acupuncture that can start to like put that tensile strength back into the nervous system, right? The acupuncture that can actually start to help build a little bit of resiliency that you feel like you might have lost, right? The herbs that can actually harmonize. And a lot of these herbs is what I consider supplements herbs as well, right? You know, like vitamin D acts like kidney yang, and, you know, like iron.
Vitamin D acts like kidney yang.
Yeah, yeah. That's like a whole other conversation. If somebody's kidney yang deficient, I often prescribe vitamin D. I'll let you noodle on that for a second. All right. So noodle on that for a second. For example, like iron, right? Like iron, there's a ton of iron in Shengdi and Shudi Wang, right? So, and we say cloying. So iron is cloying, you know, so supplements and herbs can start to recharge the physical stores that we've left, but what's going to actually put us into health is diet. So that's like, that's the third branch to that. You know, we have to be moving. We have to be moving. We have to be moving. And so whether that's Qigong or you go for a run or whatever that movement is, right? So in that five, that branch is often taught as Qigong, but that's too limiting. So that's why I say like if we redefine that a little bit as movement and whatever movement is right for you. Now listen, like I'm short, I'm stocky, I'm like an old Viking. I'm built for like pillaging and like farmer peasant shit. Like I'm meant to like carry a donkey. Like that's like what my body needs, right? So I am not.
So you work out by carrying donkeys?
I work out by carrying kettlebells.
All right, okay.
Very I'm a similar. Kettlebell girl, right? But for me, that's like my body type, like how I can get my cardio. Like I don't belong running, right? So that's another type of movement that's appropriate.
You're not
for
built
me.
Like a deer. No.
Like I can push you out of a snowstorm. Like that's like my build, right? Like it's just like, oh, the car is stuck. Go get Heidi. She'll push us out. So, but that's proper movement for me, you know. And then Tui Na, like we define Tui Na as like push pull, of course, right? But then Tui Na is also touch, mm-hmm. You know. And I think that's also why quarantine was so devastating for some people.
It's such a lack of touch.
Mm-hmm. And like I saw a friend the other day, and I started like crying a little bit because all I wanted to do was like hug my friend. And like I've had touch at home, you know, like whatever. But like there's that lack of touch at like, so now again, it's still push and pull. It's moving the joints. It's moving the muscles. It's moving like the fascia lines, like all of that. But like there's also like a little bit of touch.
There's
in there.
Push pull, but there's also that interaction that's creating that. I mean, that sense of contact, physical contact.
That's so important. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, meditation we talked about like a little bit, right? Clearing like the petty tyrant out so we can actually hear what spirit or kind of understanding what our blueprint is in the world. And meditation takes out the woulds, the shoulds, so that like we can actually see like what our purpose is, right? And then how we execute on that purpose. Feng Shui is like, how is the environment supporting you? If your environment isn't supporting you, can you change the environment a little bit? Or do you need to like raise the house? And so sometimes you do need to raise the house. But like if you're a damp constitution and like you're living in the Northeast, it's just like, I can acupuncture you until the cows come home. Bitch, you ain't going to dry out until you move to Arizona. Like you don't belong in the Northeast, right? So like sometimes like feng shui is all the way to that level versus like, dude, I need to vacuum the house because I feel dirty and I'm just going to feel better after I vacuum the house.
Get the dishes done before I sit down to write.
Whatever it is. So like those dishes aren't hanging out, like hanging like in your thought space. And then there is something to be said for, you know, astrology. And to your point, right? Like before we joined the call, I said like, I feel like I reincarnated in a bait switch, right? So like, why did I incarnate at a time when I'm of this age with this skill set and this fucking epoch? Like, why did I do this? But part of that is the astrology, and whether we want to look at Eastern or Western or whatever, but astrology are things that are bigger than us that influence our daily lives. And so if we want to include like the politics to that, if we want to include COVID to that, if we want to include
climate change,
like exactly, if we want to include climate change, like any of these like really big things that are happening on the planet right now, today, that falls into the astrology piece to it, to say like, okay, of course I'm going to be stressed. Of course I'm going to be stressed right now. Like, the world's on fucking fire. Like, can we even think back to January when, like, Australia was burning? like baby koalas were getting pulled out of forest fires. And, then, you know, it's just, like, all this stuff that inundates us, that affects us, and can we control it? No. But that also allows us to be, like, I don't have to carry it. So it lessens the burden to say, like, I see it, I recognize it, I witness, but I'm not going to carry it. I'll contribute to it. You know, one of the things that happened a couple of years ago was when it kind of first hit the news that there were children at the border being put in cages separated from families with a lot of these immigration policies. There are some of us in the office, and it just hit the shin. It just hit the heart, man. And it's just like, we're up in New York, and it's just like, dude, I don't have ninja skills to go break babies out of cages. Like, I don't
know.
What do I do with this? And we felt so helpless. We felt so, so, so helpless. And it was so impactful, and it was so upsetting. And it remains upsetting because it remains there. But we're just like, we don't know what to do. Well, what do we know how to do? Well, we know how to support people. That's what we do as acupuncturists, right? And like, I can't go punch a Nazi in a face, but like, I can go like help someone in that fight. I was just like, well, let me redirect my energies. And there's two of us, and we did a fundraiser. And what we did is we found a really small organization called the Asylum Seekers Advocacy Project that was like these hardcore women who were going down to the border, and they were all legislatively trying to change the laws, and they're lawyers, and they're doing advocacy, and they're trying to help, but they're a small organization. And we're just like, well, we're not going to be able to raise like $1 million, but maybe we can raise $10,000. And my girl was like, you're crazy. I'm like, no, we can do this. We can do this. So we opened up the office, and I put a call to arms for New York, right? And I was just like, practitioners, listen, I'm turning, like, we have 24 hours. I want to raise $10,000. Every single penny is going to go directly to the people. And what we're going to do is we're going to bring patients in, and we're going to charge them a little bit under market value. But instead of paying us, they pay the organization. And damn if we didn't raise $10,000 for this small organization, you know. And they were thrilled, because for them, like, $10,000, that was like 3 months of payroll. It made a difference. So
yes. This is such an important point. I think about this a lot too, where I wonder if things have always been nuts, or if things are more nuts now. Sometimes it's hard to tell, right? Because you're in the middle of it. But the point is, can you change the world, the whole world? No way. Can you do something in the corner of the world that you've got agency over?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So there's this other organization I discovered. It's a street medic organization. So maybe like a couple of years ago, we literally had like Nazis come to Washington Square Park, right? Or like they're planning to come to Washington Square Park. And they're going to do this like big like KKK protest or whatever. And I was so upset. Like, I'm built to carry a donkey, not punch a Nazi in the face. Like, that's just not my skill set, right? So like, what do I do? And I was like, I help people. So I want to go down to pull people out of the fight if I need to. And then the Nazis wound up not showing up, which is totally fine. But then I was like, which is more than fine. But I was like, maybe I need to go get EMT training, like, to help in protests and whatnot. Mm. But I was
like, expand your skill set a little.
Expand my skill set. But I was just like, do I really have the bandwidth for EMT training?
Uh-huh. Good question. How did you make that decision?
Well, there is a whole grassroots movement that started during the civil rights that came actually out of the BIPOC community, where if you are a healthcare practitioner with a healthcare training, you can go get additional training on how to help people doing civil disobedience and go pull them out of the fray. Basically, it's street medic training. So this time around, with like the Black Lives Matter stuff that's been happening here in New York, and again, this came out of specifically the Black community of the civil rights, right? But it's training, it's literally training on how to go support people in protests and what that looks like. And it's not like a ton of additional like outside our acupuncture training, right? It's like 30 hours.
It's some emergency medicine. It's emergency medicine. It's like, how do you deal in situations of social unrest, situational awareness, how to be safe, how to help others be safe.
And how to do it respectfully, right? Like how to do it respectfully and how to walk into that space. And we talked about this in like another offline conversation, but how to walk into that space as active witness.
Tell me about active witness. What do you mean by active witness?
So most of us have experienced death in some way. And many of us have been at the deathbed of someone. When we're called to that deathbed, you know, what are we really being called to do? We're not going to revive them. We're not going to change the course of what's been set in motion. We are being called to witness a passing. And there's healing in that. There's deep, honored, active healing in that witness. And that's what we do in the treatment room. As acupuncturists, right? Someone comes into the treatment room, you kind of get to a point in your career, and I think you're probably here too, it's where you're almost unshockable. And it's not because we hear shocking things, it's because like we're witnessing this human experience in front of us as an active participant in their journey. And sometimes, Michael, that's enough to change the course of what they need. It's just simple presence.
I've seen it time and time again.
Of just simple presence.
Nothing simple about simple presence.
No. And when was the last time you were really listened to?
Mm-hmm.
Like where you felt listened, not just listened, but you felt heard and seen. For most people, that experience, they might never have had that experience.
I would say it's rare. I'd say there's a lot of noise out there. But to actually be listened to really be listened to.
And the person who's listening, they're not there to offer remedy to the situation. They're not there to offer advice. They're not there to tell you what to do. They're not there in judgment. They're only just sitting, like, witnessing this kind of unraveling, this process that you're going through, right? And if you've had that, like having that person like kind of like look at you, it starts to feel like uncomfortable at first. It's like, what are you doing? And it's just like, I'm just watching you. I'm just here with you. And then once there's that kind of that tipping point of like they feel safe, all of a sudden the healing happens. And that's what I mean by the active witness. And we have that as a cultivated skill set as practitioners. If you're a good acupuncturist, you have that as a cultivated skill set.
I would say the practice, if you do it long enough, if you practice in clinic long enough, the conditions are right that it most likely will naturally arise. We're creating conditions and circumstances for something like that to arise. It may not. There are things you could do to
And it doesn't happen every time. It doesn't happen every time.
Of course it doesn't happen every time. But you just said something, you just used a word unraveling, which rings a bell for me because it's a word that goes through my mind multiple times every day, given where our world is in this moment. Sometimes I feel quite overwhelmed myself. And how do I know when I'm getting to that? Well, for you, it's making a casserole.
Or swearing at babies.
Or swearing at babies. And for me, it's when I just kind of sit and feel this kind of angst at what I call the great unraveling. Okay. It's just like, oh, fuck, man. Here we are in the middle of the great unraveling. Oh, now what? You know? So the word unraveling has been in my mind a lot lately. I've been writing about it a bit and just, you know, I've just been noticing it, right? It's almost like a guide. It's like a guide on this journey right now. So you were just talking about unraveling. And one of the things that's occurred to me about unraveling lately, because I see patients unravel all the time, this thing that we were just talking about, where you can bring an active witness to a person's unraveling. If we are trustworthy, then our patients can unravel in our presence. And if we can be present with that, something happens.
Yeah, something magic happens. And I think
something happens.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the mistakes I definitely made like early in the practice, right, is when that would start to happen, I felt like I had to contain it, correct it, change it, do something with it. But the further I got in practice, I was just like, I don't need to do shit. Like, I just have to like sit here with it and listen to the pulse, you know, not to be a dick and be like, this will come eventually. But it came eventually to be like, oh, this is what listening to the pulse like means. It's like a nervous system interact, like your nervous system interacting with their nervous system, and how like you're taking in that information is identical to how you listen, like you hear things, right? And so like listening to the pulse, like as they're unraveling, and it's just like, I don't need to course correct. I just have to give it direction.
Mm-hmm. I suspect all of us have our own way of when things unravel just enough, there's some fluidity, there's some malleability. And so that when things recoalesce, it can recoalesce with a higher state of coherence.
Mm-hmm. It's stable. It becomes stable.
It becomes more stable. There's more coherence. But it takes that unraveling, which most of us get uncomfortable with. And I know for myself too, I hear you talk about your growth with that as a practitioner. I would want to name it and fix it or reframe it or whatever, because I was uncomfortable with that moment of unraveling. And as I could become more comfortable with it and sit, like you say, with an active witness, a sense of appreciation, sense of trust. You know, we talk about uwe, right? Using no effort. Uwe is not nothing. It's not the lack of something. It's actually a whole lot of something.
It's actively passive.
It's actively passive. There we go. Which really builds the vitality.
And again, I can't speak to other places. I can only speak to like my little corner of the world. In my little corner of the world, with like social justice stuff happening as a cisgender straight white woman, right?
You know,
who carries donkeys, you know, and like, you know, as an American and, you know, everything that comes with that. I went to Antioch, you know, super liberal arts, like progressive, like blah, 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 blah. And, you know, however I think of myself, you know, in that arena, it needs to be challenged. And it's just like, what is being asked of me in this moment? In my specific cross-sectionality, what is being asked of me? And what is being asked of me is the conscious witness. And it's being asked of me like over and over and over and over again. It can be stressful, but it's not the kind of stress that's going to kill you. To your point, in the unraveling, at first it feels uncomfortable when you see it. Right? It feels like it's real uncomfortable. And it's just like, well, what do I do with that? And it's just like the good practitioner doesn't do much, but they're present. They're really, truly present to it. And I think, you know, and not to take it down like kind of like the social justice line, but like, you know, what we're being asked, some of us for the first time in our lives, right, is like this stuff has always been happening. It's just now on film. And so what we're being told, we're being like, look at this, don't blink and don't look away. Don't look away. Don't blink. Just stare it down. And for a lot of us, that adds to the stress that we've never personally felt. And that's what I mean by when I said there's like psychosocial stress. So there's the psychosocial stress, all kinds of this. But to come back to the chi budget, to come back to like the financial practice management budget, where I said like, how much does it cost to be you? Make sure you're paying your taxes. And then that extra 20% in your chi budget, you have to have that extra 20% because that's resiliency. That's resiliency. So after you've paid the taxes and after you've paid to be you, if you get knocked down and you don't have that 20%, right, financially,
you're not coming back up.
You're not coming back up. You're not coming back up. So that extra 20% is kind of a non-negotiable, right? Where people are like, well, I don't really need it. I'm just starting out. And it's just like, you need it financially and you need it like chi budget wise, you know? And so, and I know for me, like for examples, like again, just with my body type, like if I eat fat and protein in the morning, like I can take on 15 patients and be okay. If I have iced coffee and like a croissant in the morning, I'm fucked.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Oh. I used to do coffee and cinnamon rolls in the morning, and you know, now I know why I was always like so whacked out at 10:30.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But this is part of like the discovery, right? And for each of us, it's going to be a process of discovery that like is unique and individual, and we need to support each other in it. So if somebody has that 150 patient clinic and that's their chi budget, I cheer them, I applaud them, I high five them, and I stand in awe. And if somebody has a 7 patient, 5 patient, and that's their chi budget, I cheer them, I applaud them, and I stand in awe, you know? So. Yeah.
So this is really helpful. I so appreciate the thought of a chi budget, especially in the way that you describe it. And that we need to build in the resiliency piece. I think a lot of us as healers, and I know I stand in that number, something I've had to work with over the years, that it's like, well, you know, I can give up a little bit of this so I can help this person over there. You can do that for a little while, but that is not sustainable. And if you want to build a sustainable practice to help more people, then you need to make sure you're building something sustainable. And building something sustainable means that you're attending to yourself so that you can do the damn work.
And that's not narcissistic, right? It's not narcissistic.
I think it's more narcissistic to say I'm super person, I don't need it.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, and I told you this before, it's like, get real friendly with the word no. Real friendly with that word no. Because we're saying no to something means saying yes to something else, because that's the budget, right? So
opportunity cost.
It's opportunity cost. And it's like, God, like I really want to go drinking with the boys on Friday night, because I love drinking with the boys, but I'm so tired after, and I'm clearly already eating casserole right now, right? So like I actually have to say no to drinking with the boys, because I'll be spending that 20%. And that 20%, like I had to work for it.
Yes, we do. And from one point of view, you can look at that 20% and go, oh my God, I got to give myself an extra 20%. Who do I think I am to receive 20% extra?
Who are you not? Who are you not?
Well, here's the other thing.
Yeah.
I think about how quickly that 20% could get spent. Something comes along. Oh shit, I only got 20%. Ugh. You know, I'm used to having 100%. Now I got 20%. Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh.
Mm-hmm. There's this concept in Japan when I lived there that I learned called hara hachi bunme, which means 80% full. Hara hachi bunme. So you only eat until your insides are 80%, right? You never eat, you never feast until 100%. So there's always that 20% room for digestion, for, you know, because you have to work with like the food you just put into you, right? So you know,
room to work that stuff around.
Yeah. And like a lot of people will work to 100%. 80% is good enough. 80% is really good enough. So in the chi budget, those of us that are used to working like 100% now, like to reference like the other podcast I did with you, the Hashis, right? Like Hashi people, like autoimmune people, like we'll work to 120. 4,000 fucking square foot, like Manhattan Center. Like, yeah, we're going to do this. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Like, I am prime suspect, guilty number one with that, clearly, right? But when I remember, and one of the things I teach and I try to live by, you know, we call it a practice, not a perfect, but one of the things I try to live by is the 80%. And I often feel guilty when I don't do the 100%. Right? Like there's a little bit of shame. It's like, God, I need to be giving more.
I wouldn't know anything about that.
Right? But it's just like, God, I really should be, like, I'm such a douchebag. I need to give more, but 80% is good enough.
Yeah. So one of my favorite things.
Yeah.
And this is like a mantra I have to keep coming back to, because I keep thinking I have to do 100% too. I keep coming back to the 80-20 rule. I love the 80-20 rule. Now, part of me goes, you like the 80-20 rule, Michael Max, because you're so fucking lazy, right? And you're just trying to cut a corner. But no, I think the 80-20 rule is putting a governor on that guy who wants to spin too damn many plates. 80-20 rule, if you don't know, is that, like, let's say, for example, income. You will generally make 80% of your income from 20% of your patients. And you see this all over the place, right? You want to do whatever you want to do. It's like, if you do the right 20%, you'll get 80% of what you need. That last 20% is going to take 80% more effort. You really don't need to do it. 20% of your patients will give you 80% of your problems.
Yep. Truth. Truth.
So, you know, again, we're looking at this 80% thing, this like leaving some room and also recognizing that with the right 20%, you're actually good, bro.
Well, but healing happens in the quiet times.
And healing happens in the quiet times.
Right. And so we actually have to budget for that quiet time. And that's that 20%. Right? That's that 20%. And we have patients who come in, and it's just like, God, you know, we came into this medicine. Most people and most students I see who come into this medicine come into the medicine because they want to be of service. They want to give their all. Like, they want to be one-on-one with people. They're empathic and empathetic, and like they're so juicy and they have so much love to give. And if they're only giving 80%, they feel like they're withholding. Right. And that's something that we actually have to retrain and regroom, that we're not withholding, that we can offer to your point in the act of witness, that you're setting an environment, you're creating an environment for things to happen, not for you to do things. So if you create that environment for the patient to put their bags down versus you carrying their bags, which is the other 20%, they learn what it feels like for you to carry their shit versus them putting their shit down. And you think you're treating. When
you think you're being helpful.
You think you're being helpful when
you're actually hobbling them.
You're hobbling them and you're moving into taxation.
Yeah. You're not doing yourself any good. Oh, man, I'm exhausted at the end of the day.
No, that's not where we need you. We need you out there kicking ass.
That's right. Make sure you got enough energy in your chi budget to go kick some ass. That seems like a pretty good place to wind this down. Heidi, anything else that you have to say about
this?
I mean, we've kind of rambled here over this past hour and a half.
This was like super rambling, but I think like that's where we are in the world right now. And I think, you know, we just need to be like holding space for each other. And we still need to be like, just like you and I do on occasion, like, hey, Michael, how you doing? I'm good. How are you doing? You know, calling people in Florida, just calling each other, because we're all having different experiences. And again, our skill set is active witness. We can use that for each other and community as well.
Wonderful. Well, as ever, I enjoy the hell out of our talks.
You do. This is fun.